Welcome to The Atypical Leader with Rick Brennan, where we talk about harnessing what makes you unique
and maybe even a little odd,
while at the same time dismantling the notion that you have to be a certain type of person or act a certain way to be an effective leader.
You're definitely a leader, not a follower.
I like the sound of this.
It's time for us atypical leaders to come out of the shadows and learn to be proud and confident in what makes us different.
I'm proud of who I am.
I'm proud of who I am.
Atypical Leader starts now.
Good afternoon, Judy.
Good afternoon, Rick. How are you?
I've had better afternoons.
Why?
Well, because I've been talking to you for like half hour going around in circles. Jesus Christ.
That's not very nice to say.
Well, what's wrong with that? It's the truth. Don't we want to talk the truth here?
Yeah, well, I'm always too polite to talk the truth.
Oh, God, you are an angel. You are an angel who's been sent down from heaven. And your humility is something else, too. It's crazy.
Just for you, Rick.
Okay, yeah, dark angel. So anyway, seriously, how are you? You good?
I'm good. I'm very good. Yeah, it's cold and rainy. How's it there in Hoppo?
Well, it's warm and kind of looks like it might rain, but it's pretty good.
Okay, anything new happen in Hoppo these days?
Well, no, I got out and golfed this morning, but hey, I bought the massages. Yeah, really, really good prices. You know, the thing is, it's low season now, so everybody's kind of hurting, so the deals are out there to be got. So I got a deal today for 20 massages for $250.
Wow, that's amazing.
Oh, that's amazing. And we're talking a top-notch place.
Where is it?
Well, it's out by the golf course, sort of in that area. It's on the edge of a river, so they have the place where, you know, the babbling brook's going by and all that sort of stuff, and it's very professional, and I love it. I've been going there for years, and so this is great. So, in fact, Judy, I got you and Linda a package.
Oh, cool.
I know.
How good you are to me and my sister.
Well, I think you could use a massage or two.
Okay, I'm not going there.
Well, no, it is what it is. Take it. You can read into that whatever you want.
Okay, I'm going to move on now.
Okay.
Let's move on to what we're actually going to talk about today.
Okay, good. Sounds great.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about self-awareness, unawareness, and executive unawareness, which is a new one for me. So what do they mean, and can you give us a simple definition, Rick?
Sure, I will try my best. And I think they're kind of self-evident to everyone, maybe not the last one so much. But self-awareness is about understanding how you are perceived by others, you know, understanding your strengths and your weaknesses. Awareness is understanding and being sensitive to your environment and the people around you. So self-awareness is an internal thing. Do I understand me? Do I understand how I'm being perceived? Awareness is an external. Am I aware how people are perceiving me? So they're tied very much together. There's no doubt about it. Unawareness is obviously the opposite of awareness. You don't have a clue what's going on around you. And what I find is that it's becoming more and more prevalent in the executive's rank. Executives have become so focused on objectives, bottom line, towing the company line, that they're no longer, or they're less and less aware of the environment around you and what's going on with their team.
So why are we talking about this? I mean, how does this come into the leadership, you know, role that we talk about?
Well, I think it comes both into leadership and newer diversity. And that combination of that, you know, those typical executives have certain skills that we neurodiverse atypicals don't. They're IQ smart, they're analytical, they have a political acumen, just a host of other skills that we lack. Where can we stand out? Especially because we're quirky and weird and wonderful. And that's about understanding our environment. Understanding how we're being perceived by the people around us. Understanding when they look at us, what they're thinking. When you're in a meeting, are they really getting it? When you talk to them, are they really getting it? Understanding how you're coming across to them. Those are key factors to give us an advantage. None of this means that we're going to change based on how you're perceived, but the knowing part is a critical thing. Okay, we all are what we are. Yeah, okay, so let me say that again. None of this means that you're going to change based on how you perceive other people are seeing. But knowing is critical. And I could add, it doesn't mean that you're not going to change either. It's the knowing part. It's always going to be a balancing act between owning who you are, protecting your skill set and your perspective, while at the same time evolving into the best version of yourself, which means you're going to need to change, grow, and evolve constantly. So let's look at self-awareness.
Okay, let's.
You need to be able to look other people in the eyes and understand what they're feeling. Scan the room, be able to get the vibe. You need to be in tune with your strengths and your weaknesses. You need to see who's buying into your shit or who thinks you're full of shit. You need to understand how your actions and the words you use impact the people around you.
So, oh, hold on. Wait. Are you saying that you change to change for others? Like, that doesn't sound like you at all.
Well, no, I'm not necessarily saying that. What I'm saying is you need to know who you are. And you can decide to adapt or not. And you might decide it's okay that you don't give a shit, that I'm trying to make a point and I know everyone's pissed off and I'm all right with that today. Many times in my career, I've pissed off the team. I was not happy, not satisfied, and I was intentionally pushing their buttons to get a reaction. Now, appreciate we've already have a pretty good culture, but it was time to push the buttons at that point in time.
Okay, so let me get this right. You must be self-aware to know your impact on others, right? So, for example, it's one thing to be an asshole, but it's another thing to know you're an asshole.
You're right on there, Judy. Right on. You. Nothing could be have said any better than that. That's right. It's all right to be an asshole, but not knowing your one is death. Oh, my God. As an atypical and a neurodivergent person, it's a good chance that we're going to be different from the rest of the crowd. I mean, there's no surprise. The question is, how do you capitalize on your atypicalness? And like me in my life, I've been dependent on other people's help. I knew that I wasn't always willing to accept that help. I knew I needed help, but accepting the help was another thing.
The question is, how do you capitalize on your atypicalness?
To take advantage of what the typical thinkers don't see. So a big opportunity is just seeing that, just seeing what others don't see, seeing what the opportunity is. And a lot of that is just by looking people in the eye. Do they get it? Do they understand? Because that then leads into, are we organized and accountable and all those sorts of things.
I get that we have an edge as being atypicals, but what do you mean by seeing what others don't? Like, can you go into that a little deeper for me?
Absolutely. So we're sitting in a meeting. Somebody comes in and they make this great speech. They cover all their points and they walk out thinking, covered my agenda, did a good job. Go back into that room, rewind. So you're making a presentation. You can look around the room. You see people looking at their shoes, glossied eyes, obviously don't understand a goddamn thing that you're saying. Flicking their pants, looking in the sky, looking out the window. Either they don't care, they're not invested, or they don't understand. That's what I mean. That's when the self-aware and aware executive will stop the meeting and say, okay, guys, what's going on here? What am I not explaining? What do I need to change? And have a dialogue, because the most important thing in any meeting is that exchange of information, that everybody understands that exchange of information. Everybody leaves the room with a clear expectation of where we're going and what we're going to do. Otherwise, the meeting is of no use to anybody. And that's what I mean. It's that self-awareness, that awareness that allows you to do that. And I believe that that can be our advantage because I've always depended on people. I need to know that those people are invested. They are my mechanism to be successful. And if they walk out of that meeting not informed, not ready to make it happen, then I've failed. Then I lose my advantage.
So that's really being self-aware and aware at the same time, right? Like you have to, first of all, be aware of yourself, and then you have to look outward, like you say, and be aware of what's happening around you.
Oh, yeah, they're tied at the hip. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And to be aware, let's face it, you need a bit of humility. If you walk into the room believing you're the smartest person in the room and that your way is the only way and the best way and all that, first of all, you lose a lot of self-awareness, and you're not, that because you're so slanted by your own opinion and your own ego, you become clouded to the reality of everyone around you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, I can remember one time too, you talk about that type of situation. I went to a think tank. And a really important think tank. It's about, okay, how are we going to restructure the company to move us into the next phase of our life? And it was all presented, okay, we need everybody's input. We're going to be creative and throw things out there. Maybe we can do this and maybe we can do that. But when we went to the think tank, let me tell you, the agenda was done. The decisions were made. The backup material was all there, all to push us in a certain direction that had already been decided. Well, and you know what? That's not that strange, because you were coming back to that executive unawareness. They are so wrapped up in wanting to move their agenda forward that, one, they either are not self-aware or they don't really give a shit, right? Because ego, lack of humility, no empathy, all those sorts of things have taken a walk off the pier, so to speak. And they're driven by ego and things that just don't allow them to capture what's going on around them.
I can't believe that people would do that, but okay.
Well, you know, it's crazy, right? If you think about it, certain people get in certain positions and they believe that their way is the right way. And so now it is, okay, I'm so convinced my way is the right way. How do I convince everyone else of that? And then you start to structure meetings, think tanks in this case, to achieve that goal. The goal becomes convincing everybody that I'm right. I mean, you got to understand, when you get to there's a certain type of person that rises to the top of an organization. Now, I've got to be careful. I might be painting myself with the same brush here. They truly believe that everything they say is golden, and that they're truly passing on their wisdom and, you know, onto all of us. So it's to our benefit to go down that path. I, being the type of thinker I am, see all kinds of other solutions and roads that we can travel. And if that doesn't conform, and I got to tell you, in this situation, that did not go over well, because I'm not the one to conform to that, because I didn't believe in most. And I can tell you, in hindsight, everything they talked about in that think tank pretty much failed. And it failed because it didn't have just what you said, that real, genuine, okay, let's talk about this. Throw away all your perceived numbers and let's get to the real numbers and what do they really mean. I mean, it goes on forever. I mean, executive, I can go back and we've talked about, well, before we do that, I mean, this executive unawareness, I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, and it really is because people get maybe to a level of competence or incompetence or what it is. But, you know, bosses that walk in the morning, head down, don't say hello to anybody. I mean, I've experienced that.
Me too, because I didn't want to talk to anybody. I'd be the boss.
Well, that's what I mean. But it's an interesting thing that you say that. Really, why would you do that? But because you lack self-awareness if you did that.
Oh, definitely. Oh, no, I knew. I was aware. I was cranky that day or something.
Oh, a day. I mean, you can't define anybody by a day. But bosses who slam people and they're really not even aware that they did anything wrong. You know, people, the boss is covering their back or wanting their bonus, and it's so obvious to everybody. I mean, sometimes you swear to God that sometimes I think that they walk around the office and they step over the dead bodies, they wouldn't even notice. You know, no, truly. You know, they're so entrenched in their point of view and their agenda and what's going on in their life, and that's what we cannot allow to happen. You cannot get so consumed, because it's almost a death wish. I mean, because we need people to succeed. We need people to be at their best, to be accountable, to understand. And the minute we as atypical become self-aware and go down that other path, we've lost all our advantage. So we can't allow that to happen.
You mean if we lost our self-awareness?
Well, the thing is that the self-awareness connects you to your team. I mean, you want your team to be at their best. So you need to know how you're coming across to them. You need to be aware how they're feeling. How do you maximize their potential? That is, in leadership, our advantage. So if you lose that, now you're starting to see why I'm saying that it's so important to us. We have to be aware. We have to be self-aware. And it's scary the degree that it can go. I mean, I remember the IDSC project, that hospital automation project. You know, we'd worked on that for years. Once we got the contracts on, you know, Montreal decided that they needed to move, bring people in to help us, which we really didn't need any help, but that was the thing they wanted to do. And again, it became so focused on, oh my God, what spreadsheet you're going to use and what chart we're going to use and all that sort of stuff that, in my mind, who gives a shit? But it came so consumed with that. And that it almost got to the point that there's literally people being used and abused, and nobody cares because they're worried about the color of the chart. But it was almost like that. And then the team starts to get diminished, but nobody seems to notice. And even when I tell them, you know, our team are trying to get the job done, they're getting pulled in other directions, you kind of have multiple bosses because, you know, although I'm running the region at the time, I'm not running the hospital business across the country. So you kind of, there's a two-boss scenario happening. It's my team, but doing a hospital project for the national group. So, you know, it can be, you know, confusing. The one thing that shouldn't be confusing is that, you know, we have all these great mission statements of how people should act this way and treat people this way, and that all can get diminished because executives become so unaware what's going on, so convinced that other things are more important. But it happens all the time. And that's the things that we can't do. Now, you know, I say that it happens all the time. I'm probably taking that too far, and I'm trying to making it sound like every executive out there is evil. That's not the case at all. I don't mean that. I just mean that there's a slant towards this unawareness that other things more than the team, more than the what's going on in the minute, are becoming more important than people and teams and that sort of stuff.
I never thought of it like that. You know, I never broke it down like you've broken it from self-aware to awareness to unawareness. Now, executive unawareness. Like, you know, I never thought of taking it that far before. But when you talk about it, it makes sense.
But you think about it, we all have that, I think, to some degree, right? We get wrapped up in our own shit, and we're not as aware as we should be. And I just think that, to be fair to the executives that we're talking about, there's so much pressure to achieve goals, objectives, toe the line, be politically sound, rules and policies and all that, that it's almost a culture that pulls them away from this awareness. And another thing I would add is that the executives that we hire all come from that core, that typical bucket, who have lived a life being self-reliant, have really achieved success based on themselves, and then we ask them to lead, as opposed to an atypical leader who has spent a life dealing with people. I think it's harder to pull them away from that. I mean, they're always going to be focused on teams. They're always going to be a little more self-aware because they spent a whole lifetime reflecting on ourselves, you know, told that we couldn't do this and couldn't do that, but yet we've achieved. So we've been built one way, but we tend not to end up in leadership positions. The typical person who's been self-reliant ends up in those things. So they're more easy, I think, pulled over to that executive unawareness side of the ledger.
Back to the help thing, you know, that was the one thing I was not good at. I could not ask for help. And it showed in my leadership. I just couldn't go there. Maybe I wasn't self-confident enough to ask for help. I felt that I was weak by asking for help, that I didn't want to show people that, you know, I didn't know everything. But of course I didn't know everything. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, but we know what you mean. Now, I was the total opposite of that. Finally, geez, if I'd run down the hall 10 times a day, okay, help me with this, help me with that, blah, blah, blah. I had no problem with any of that because my need to win or not fail, whatever, however you want to slice it, was that high.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just, you know, really, it was probably one of my big downfalls by not asking for help because I had smart people around me, very, very good people around me, and they helped me a lot, but I never felt comfortable approaching them. They came to me for help all the time. And I guess that's what I saw my role as.
Well, that is very interesting. So that is, you know, something that you personally, you might want to delve into. Because that's a big question, you know, is it?
With lack of self-confidence.
What do you mean? But didn't you have a tribe around you, people you could trust? So that has nothing to be confident to say, Johnny, can you help me out?
But you know, I think it was because everyone came to me for help. I was the person that helped everybody. So for me to turn around and ask people for help maybe made me feel weak. I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, but one does, I don't, that's great that everybody came to your help, but it's still a very different thing than you would naturally, because you would think that in a team atmosphere where people were coming to you for help, if you truly needed help, that you would feel very normal and natural to go ask someone for it.
I mean, I asked, you know, I there was a couple people, but generally, I would always struggle through by myself, you know, because I was strong and I could do it. So anyway, you know, that's one thing I've learned to do over the last years is ask for help. I have no fear now of asking for help.
Well, it's a critical piece. I mean, you just don't know what you don't know, right?
Exactly. And I didn't know. I didn't know. And I wouldn't allow myself to admit that I didn't know.
Because that is a lesson for anybody listening, because that's got to hold you back. That's got to create stress, anxiety. Yeah. Which then puts you at the bottom level of the spectrum.
Therefore, I reacted on my stamp.
Well, there you go. So it's a great example of it all ties together. By one simple thing, you're just resistant for whatever reason. Let's kind of psychoanalyze you. For whatever reason, you're not going for help, cause many other things to happen, put you in very different places on your spectrum, probably in many ways minimized your abilities, because when you're stressed and worried and all that sort of stuff, you just don't perform as well.
Yeah, and my team, they suffered for it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a real learning experience for me. It really has.
Well, good for you. Good for you. That's fantastic. Because what you're talking about is you moving to another level through all these conversations we've had in the podcast and realizing that that whatever it was that couldn't allow me to go ask for help was me not being self-aware. Like you just said, my team struggled because of it. I struggled because of it. Yet you couldn't bust through that wall.
You know what I think it was? It kept me feeling like I was in control.
Really? That you were the mastermind, you knew, and you didn't want to show that you didn't know. It's so different than me, because I'm like, fuck, I don't know anything. Help me. But because my skill was never knowing. I never thought I had all the answers. I just knew if I could get all the answers, no one could pull it off like me. Well, you wouldn't always get them because you don't know what you don't know. You wouldn't even know where to look.
And therefore, my team suffered for it. You know, I was under a lot of pressure, but you know, you start putting pressure on yourself. And then, of course, your team feels the pressure.
Well, it sounds like it's this whole conversation is really kind of help you put some things together in your mind.
Definitely. And it almost makes me want to, just for fun, because I mean, I don't need to know what I am, but it almost makes me want to get tested and see what happens. It might explain why I acted and reacted the way I did when I was younger.
Okay, I think you're bang on. The question that you just, as you're talking, it makes me think, okay, but how do you know if you're self-aware? How do you really know? Have you go and talk to people and say, hey, how'd that go? What'd you think? How am I coming across to other people? Are you really looking for the hard answers? And that's how you get there. You know, it's not that I look around the room and I think I know, because you don't know if you know. You don't know unless you validate that with people that you trust. You don't know unless you've looked around the room and you think I've got it, and later on you see that you didn't. You've got to learn from those sorts of things to be better at that. It's an evolving process. You don't wake up tomorrow, now I'm self-aware. It just doesn't work like that. You got to work at it.
Because at that time, I wasn't self-aware. I wasn't strong enough, even if I was self-aware, I wasn't strong enough and believed in myself strong enough to put it forward and be willing to fight the powers to be at that point.
Right. Because, you know, part of it is accepting criticism. Look, frankly, part of it is accepting criticism, actively looking for criticism. Tell me how I can be better. Tell me what I'm not doing.
Yeah. And that's hard to, and that's something that maturity helps with. Time, you know, it's also, you know, who's giving it to you, how they're giving it to you. I mean, you know, you want positive criticism.
Well, you know what? That's great to say that, but I could tell you, I've got a thousand examples of negative criticism that helped me to be self-aware. It doesn't always get packaged in the way, because it can't be, oh, poor little me, I didn't get positive feedback. If a feedback's feedback, suck it up and take it. Right. And that's, you know, and that's by surrounding yourself with the right people, having the right tribe and all those sorts of things. So that's very cool. Now, that's a very good conversation. Let's wrap it up here today. I'd ask you all to look at yourself and strive towards self-awareness and becoming more aware of your environment and the people around you. It will be one of your keys to success.
Thanks for joining us today and listening to another episode of The Atypical Leader. If you haven't already done so, like, share, and follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. By liking and sharing, you will help other atypicals find all of us, so we can all start to leverage the stories, strategies, and strengths of what make us all unique. Keep listening and remember, take charge and push away those self-doubts. Leverage what we're talking about. Be confident in who you are and proud of what makes you unique.
So join me, Rick Brennan, and my co-host Judy Sims on the next episode of The Atypical Leader. And don't forget to get your copy of the book, The Atypical Leader, Harnessing the Power of Neurodiversity, on Amazon. To learn more about us, leadership, and neurodiversity, please go to our website, atypicalleader.com.
Thanks for listening. Let's do it again next week.